right, everybody. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. This right here is my home show. Thanks for joining us today. This is the show where every week we talk about your biggest investment, your home. That's your home. And as always, we're brought to you by the fine folks at Accurate Mortgage. If you're looking to purchase or refinance a home, they're the people who can help you out. They'll get you closed and back to life. We got a great show for you this week. Joining me in the studio, as always, is the great Steve Kenny, mortgage pro extraordinaire. And this week, we've got a special guest. We've got Wendy Dyes of the Legacy Real Estate Group in Brentwood. She's going to be talking to us a little bit about the market and what's coming up here in 2020 as far as buying, selling, and all that good stuff. But we're also going to be talking a little bit about the latest in smart home technology, which I don't know if a lot of people know, but there's a big show every year called the Consumer Electronics Show, CES it's called, and they just had it about 2 weeks ago in Las Vegas, and that's where they show all the latest gizmos and gadgets and things. And anybody who knows me, Wendy's known me a little while, so she knows this, I love gadgets. If it's got blinking lights on it, I'm in. So, if it requires batteries, I'm in. I just love gadgets. And I shouldn't say it just if it needs to be plugged in, because I like stuff in the kitchen too. I like to cook. So I love Williams-Sonoma. If there's gadgets, that can, you need to put together and, assemble. A lot of times these gadgets are more trouble than they're worth. It's just easier to grab a butter knife and do what you needed to do, but they're just cool to have. So anyway, we're going to be talking a little bit about that. One of the things that caught my eye about what was being shown at CES, there's one called the Kohler Moxie. It's a brand new shower head. If you like to sing in the shower, this thing's got Alexa and an Alexa speaker built into the shower head. Now, do you guys sing in the shower, Steve?
I don't.
You don't?
No.
Come on.
Singing is not my forte.
How about you, Wendy?
Oh, sure. Every once in a while.
Okay.
Great acoustics.
So you might want to have one of these. I mean, I don't really know what kind of things you would like to ask Alexa while you're in the shower other than play this or play that. But, if you really needed to know the weather while you're in the shower or who the president of Uruguay is, you can just ask Alexa, because a lot of thinking time happens in the shower, and you need to know stuff.
Shower thoughts.
Shower thoughts. That's right.
You could order more soap.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool. It's a circular shower head that's got Alexa built in, and you can actually separate the speaker and take it with you out of the shower if you need to. So if you just go straight from the shower to the backyard, hopefully, with a pit stop at the closet to put some clothes on, you can take that thing with you. Did you see anything that you saw?
Yeah,
Steve, I did. That came out?
I did, actually. A couple of days ago, Dyson, which you're familiar with Dyson.
Yeah,
I've
got one of their vacuums.
Yeah, their vacuums are actually really great. But Dyson came out with this, I'm going to call it a lamp, like a desk lamp. It's called the Dyson Light Cycle. So Dyson says that we spend 90% of our time indoors. So
yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, so yeah. Having good lighting is pretty important. So here's what this lamp does. It will adjust for brightness and hue based on the time of day, based on any surrounding light. So if you've got other lights on in the house, or if there's just light coming in from the windows, it also adjusts for blue light. And this was the kicker that got me. It even adjusts for your age.
What?
Yes.
How does it know?
So there's an app for that, just
of
like everything.
There is. Yeah, there's an app for that.
Just like everything, there's an app for that. So apparently, as you get older, and this is according to Dyson, so I'm just taking their word for it, your eye muscles weaken and your cornea actually stiffens a little bit.
Right.
So that makes it harder to adjust. So as you get older, you need to have more light in order to be able to read and do things like that. So what you do is you plug in your age in the app, and it just knows if you're around with your phone, it knows that you're the one who's using it. So it was pretty cool. But here's the other thing that really caught my eye about this.
Yep.
Guess how much it cost?
I would have to say, with all that, at least $99, right?
$599.
What?
Yes. Yeah.
For a lamp.
Yes. And the other funny part,
that's all cool and stuff, but really?
Well, and here's where I think is the marketing genius behind Dyson.
Right.
You can actually finance this lamp for $53 a month.
Well, at Accurate Mortgage, we do not finance lamps, unfortunately.
We do not.
No, that's interesting. Wow, that's kind of cool. A lamp. That's I don't know if I could justify that expense, though.
Well, I agree with that. I actually think the features of the lamp are really cool. It's something that I would use, especially, you know, as people who sit at a desk and stare at a computer. You know, I've got a pair of those blue light glasses to make sure that I'm not overstressing my eyes. So something like that, I think, would be really cool. But I'm going to wait for the knockoff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's see. You know, one of the other things we all have, or a lot of us have, smart locks. I've got a smart lock on my house, and that's a really cool thing. You don't have to mess with keys.
Yep, we've got one too.
Yeah, you just punch in the number and in you go. You can, you know, control it with your app. You know, so if you're not home and you need to let somebody in, or you can kind of keep track of who's coming and going with the app, which is awesome. Well, there's a couple of new ones out. Level is a company that's making one that's called an invisible smart lock. So it kind of does all the same smart lock things, but what it does is it hides inside your existing deadbolt. So you don't have to replace the whole lock that you already have in your house. You just get this little gadget, put it inside, and it does all the smart lock stuff that you would need it to do without having to change out everything. Because, you know, those handles and lock sets, they're pretty expensive. So it'd be nice to not have to replace all of that, especially if you like the look of it. And, you know, you might not be able to replace that same look with what you see out on the market. So it's about, about $200, about $199. And the company's name is Level. And it works with Apple HomeKit and Alexa and all that stuff. So I thought that was kind of cool that you can get a smart lock that you don't have to replace everything. But here's another cool one. Neatmo, which is another company that makes a lot of smart gadgets, they have a smart lock that works a little differently. It actually still uses keys.
Really?
So, yeah, it uses keys. But the thing with that one is, with the app, you can rekey all your locks. So you don't have to, if you need to change the keys or make a special key for like the babysitter or the dog sitter or something like that, you just use the app and it all kind of works in there. You don't have to call a locksmith. You don't have to take the lock apart and kind of fiddle with all the, I don't know if you've ever done that before, but it's a pain to kind of rekey a lock.
Yeah.
And it can be expensive. So with this thing, you just use the app to rekey the lock. So if you want to have a little bit of new school and a little bit of old school smart lock, but you still want to use the keys, maybe that's the way to go.
So would I have to get the actual key itself recut? Like, would I have to go to Home Depot and do that to make that work?
Yeah, well, according to what they said, that instead of changing the lock, you just unlink that key so that it won't work anymore. And so no new lock codes or anything like that's required. And you like I said, you can control it all through the Neatmo app. So if you just grab a different key with the app, you can just recode the lock to use that key.
Oh, interesting.
Boom, done. So you can pretty much, grab any random key and make it work. Or let's say your neighbor's going to watch your house while you're away on vacation. You can rekey it so that their key works in your lock.
Wow.
For a couple of weeks while you're gone. Because I know when you go on vacation, it's always for a couple of weeks, right?
Hey, come on now.
Come on. So would that help you as a realtor?
Oh, it would be very great. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, cool.
I can see that being an advantage.
Well, I found another one that I thought was pretty darn interesting. This one is I don't know how useful it would be, but it's pretty neat. It's a smart bathroom mat.
Really?
Yeah, smart bathroom mat. So it's one of those smart Internet of Things that's hiding out there in plain sight. You might not even know what it does, but it's a smart bath mat that can weigh you.
Oh.
You know, and sends the weight to the app. Of course, there's always an app with all these things. So it can weigh you, and it can even kind of tell you a little bit about your posture and all that sort of thing based on how your feet are touching the mat from day to day. And you can tell you, oh, you're slouching or, just there's all these health things built into that. It's probably more than most people would use, but it's there, so that's kind of cool. And, these days when you've got, your Apple Watch that's telling you when to walk and when to sit up, now you can have a bath mat that tells you, hey, fatso.
Well, wow. I think that's probably my only issue with it is I don't want to know how much I weigh every time I get out of the shower.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
As far as the posture thing goes, though, I actually am kind of interested in that. I use a standing desk, and so I have a mat that sits under the desk.
Yeah.
So not necessarily a bath mat, but if there was like a desk mat like that, that would tell me that my posture is good or I need to lean forward or backward. That would actually help me a lot.
That would be cool. Yeah. I'd just be afraid that the thing, you know, I'd step on the thing and it would just shout, "Hey, get off of me. what the heck are you doing to me?" Well, let's see. Moen is making a new faucet. As long as, you know, we talked about the smart shower faucet, they have a smart kitchen faucet that you can program. You can ask it. Let's say you say, "Hey, fill the baby's bottle," and it'll like choose the correct temperature and the correct amount and fill that bottle up. You just hold it under it. Yeah. Again, it's probably more gadget than most people would need, but it's kind of cool. I mean, at some point, we're just going to be able to tell our house to do everything.
Cooking will become a lost art form.
Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, we got summer coming up, right?
Yeah.
A lot of grilling going to happen. So Weber, not to be left out, you know, in the barbecue space, they've got a smart grilling hub. Now, the cool thing is that you can attach this to your current grill. You don't have to go out and buy a new, because grills are expensive. I think
you know,
500 or more. I mean, they have one at Costco that's like $2,000. You know, it's like, hey, you have to grill a lot of steak to make that worth it. But with this thing, you can attach it to your existing hub or your existing grill, excuse me, and it kind of tells you the temperature, it tells you the cooking time, so you can monitor your steaks without having to stand there at the grill and you know, cut into it to see when it's done. It just kind of does all that for you and sends it to your app. So your phone is going to be very, very busy because all of these things use the app, which is amazing. So go out and find yourself some of these smart apps. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. We're going to be talking a little bit more about house stuff. And actually, when we come back, I'd love to talk to you about what's going on in the mortgage world these days and as far as rates and when's a good time to refinance. So you're listening to Hino's Home Show. We'll be back in just a minute. Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. We're brought to you by the folks at Accurate Mortgage, so go check them out at accuratemtg.com. They'll get you closed and back to life. I'm here with Wendy Dyes, realtor extraordinaire, and Steve Kenny, mortgage guy extraordinaire, and of course, I'm Hino. We wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in the market right now as far as rates and stuff like that. I mean, rates kind of have gone kind of down in the last week or so, don't you think, Steve?
Yeah, they have been. It's actually been a really great opportunity for a lot of people, and it's kind of exciting to see that sort of thing because I think we need a little bit of that right now.
Everybody loves a lower rate.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's kind of one of those things that everybody shoots for. You know, when people call in, that's the first thing they want. You know, what's the rate? You know, and how can we get the lowest one? In your experience, since you're kind of got a background in this, what causes rates to go up and down? Why is it that the rates fluctuate all the time?
You know, there's actually a lot of different reasons that rates can go up or go down. A lot of it has to do with what's happening in the market. So the stock market and the bond market.
Yeah.
Mortgages, if you want to look at it that way, are pretty much like a bond. So when you hear about bond traders, some of what they're doing is mortgage-backed securities. So,
which, you know, to some people might be like, blah, blah, blah. What was that? What's a mortgage-backed security?
A mortgage-backed security, without getting too technical,
okay,
is a group of mortgages that's originated by a mortgage company and then sold on the secondary market to investors.
Okay.
All right.
So okay. So I got 100 mortgages that I've done, and now I'm going to get my money back and sell them on the secondary market.
Exactly.
Okay. Got it.
So that's one piece of it. You can also see, and we saw a lot of this week, is externalities. So it's not just things that are happening in the marketplace.
That was a fancy word. Externality?
Externality, yes.
Okay.
So anything that's external to, you know, whatever the normal topic is. So,
okay, got it.
These externalities can cause different things to happen in the market. So the one that we actually saw this past week, for anybody who was watching on Friday, the Wuhan virus is causing a lot of issues. Now,
that's the coronavirus?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. The coronavirus. I'm sorry. It originated in Wuhan. So you would think, okay, what does this disease have to do with mortgage rates, right? So what's happening is China is shutting down some of their supply chains. And so the market is looking at this and going, wow, this is going to be a problem. If I get ingredients for medication or if I buy steel from China, how am I going to get these things? So
Make sure that it's not all covered in this virus.
Well, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
So the market's looking at that and going, oh, we've got a problem. We got to figure out how to deal with this. So on Friday, the stock market, the Dow actually was down, I think, 500 points at one point mm-hmm. when I was watching it during the day.
Yeah.
And so what happens is people get scared of that. And what they do is called a flight to safety. So they move their money from the stock market into bonds. And then that causes interest rates to go lower.
Huh. So in a weird kind of way, then bad things happening on the other side of the planet actually helps our mortgage rates.
Yes.
That's kind of
and the other
sad.
The other side of that can happen too, though. So, you know, it's a two-sided coin. It's not always good for us, but in this case, it just happened to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd hate to, you know, take joy in other people's misery because that's not a good thing. I mean, what's happening over there is just horrible.
It is.
But it's weird that bad things can actually have a positive effect on the market.
Yeah.
That is weird. Now, the Fed, you know, they've lowered rates a couple of times over the last year, and there's kind of rumors that they might be doing it again. Which, you know, everybody keeps their fingers crossed for that. But that doesn't always necessarily translate into lower mortgage rates. Just because the Fed reduces their rate, it doesn't mean that, oh, gosh, now the mortgage rates are going to drop the same amount. Why is that?
That's a really good question. And actually, we get that question a lot, especially
yes,
when the Fed comes out and announces, hey, we're going to lower interest rates.
Right.
So what's a little bit different about the Fed's interest rates versus mortgage interest rates, like you said, they don't always correlate together. So if the Fed lowers the rate, that doesn't mean that mortgage rates are all of a sudden going to go down.
Right.
There was actually a statistic a couple of years ago that 60% of the time that the Fed lowered rates, it actually increased mortgage rates. So
what?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, here's why those two things, even though they're related to interest rates, are a little bit different, is because when we talk about the Fed lowering the rate, the Fed is lowering the overnight lending rate for banks.
Okay.
So what they're
banks borrow money overnight?
Yes.
Okay.
They borrow money overnight so that they can meet their capital reserves the next morning. That's a little too specific, but that is the reason that they do that. So the Fed and this interest rate, when the Fed talks about lowering rates, they're talking about lending money for one day. Okay. So with mortgages,
that's a short-term loan.
Exactly. Yes. So with mortgages, you're looking at 15, 20, 25, 30 years.
Right.
And so you've got to project out some of the risk and things that are going on with that. So that's why there's not a direct correlation, because the Fed is lending money overnight, whereas a mortgage, you're lending it for 15 to 30 years.
Right. Huh. That's interesting. I mean, one of the things that I know, when the Fed is reducing rates, they're trying to spur investor activity. They're trying to get people to invest in the market and put their money, you know, back into the market. And sometimes if a lot of investors do that, it makes the money supply tighter. So that also can make rates go up, which is counterintuitive. You think, oh, the rates went down, you know, I'm going to go refinance. What? They're higher. How did that happen? Well, that's why it happens. Now, a lot of people, when they think about mortgage rates, they think that that's the be all and end all. That's the thing that they need to do the most. But that's not necessarily always the best approach. If you're looking to buy a house or refinance a house and you're looking into getting a mortgage, you don't necessarily want to go at the lowest rate, which, again, sounds counterintuitive. But explain a little bit about why that would be, why it might be better to go with a higher rate, for example.
Well, I'm going to give you a perfect example that I just talked to someone maybe a week ago about this. It was actually a friend of mine who was just looking for some advice.
Right.
So when he bought his house, rates were higher. You know, he bought it maybe year and a half ago. So anybody who bought a house or refinanced a year and a half ago, rates are lower now than where they were before, assuming the same qualifications that you had previously. So he is only looking to stay in his house for a short time. He said, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years. So, you know, is
it's not his forever house.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. It was actually his first house. Him and his wife have had a couple of kids since then. And so they're going to have to buy a bigger house.
Kids have a lot of stuff. Holy cow. They have a lot of stuff.
Right. So in his situation, what we talked about was getting a lower rate, but he wasn't getting the market rate. He was actually getting a rate a little bit higher. And the reason for that is because there's this thing called premium pricing, where the lender can give you a credit to cover some of your closing costs.
That's right, yeah.
So in this case, he took a higher interest rate in order to get his closing costs covered, and he refinanced the existing balance.
Okay.
So he still owes what he owed the first time. His rate's a little bit higher than where the market is, but it's still lower than where he's at now.
Right.
And so it accomplished his goal of taking advantage of these lower interest rates, knowing that he's only going to be in the house for 3 or 5 years and his recoup time on his closing costs is basically zero.
Yeah. And conversely, I was dealing with somebody not too long ago where it made sense to buy down the rate because they were planning on staying in the home for a long time. They were thinking that this is probably going to be their forever home. And so it made sense to, you know, buy the rate down at the beginning, at the front end, lower their rate, even though it costs them a chunk of money. They basically recouped that investment within about 2 years, and then they were home free. So if you're going to stay in the home for a long time, you know, that saves you thousands and thousands of dollars in interest over the long term. Even though it might have cost a little bit more up front, if you're looking long term, you're saving a lot of money. So that's a reason why you might want to buy down the rate, even though a lot of people, you know, their knee-jerk reaction is, what, points? I'm not paying any points. But if you look at the analysis and you look at the numbers, like on a spreadsheet or something, you're like, oh, I'm going to pay that much less, you know, $50,000 less in interest over the life of a loan if I, you know, spend $1,500 now or something like that.
You know, here's another way that I like to look at points is prepaid interest. I actually don't call them points. I mean, we refer to them as points because that's what they are.
That's what they call them.
Another way to look at it is prepaid interest. So like you just said, if you look at this over the entire 30 years, it's going to save me $50,000. It's only going to cost me, let's say, $3,000 up front.
Right.
So I'm prepaying $3,000 instead of paying the $50,000 over the next 30 years. So it is a bet on saying, okay, I'm going to be in this house for a long period of time. Let me take advantage of that.
That's true. That's true. And then, you know, a lot of what's been happening lately is we've been seeing a lot of people refinancing their credit card debt, just all the other debt, consumer debt that people rack up. You know, everybody's guilty of it, you know, for the most part. You know, you got a credit card, you're going to use it, right?
Right.
And, you know, the interest rates on those things, talk about interest rates. I mean, they're like in the 20s and some of them even go up as high as like 30. It's just crazy how much they charge on these credit cards. And the interest on those, what a lot of people don't know is that's compounding interest. So you basically are paying interest on your interest as you go along because every day they add a little bit of interest to your balance. And then the next day, that new balance, they charge interest on that. And then so on and so on and so on every day until the end of the month. So you're paying interest on your interest as it goes along. It's the most expensive way to borrow money is a credit card. So if you pay that minimum balance that's on your bill every month, you're never going to pay that thing off because, you know, they just keep adding to it and you're just paying off what got added to it that month. And you're not really you know, buying down your principal. So a lot of people are combining that into a mortgage and refinancing, getting rid of all that high interest debt. And even though their mortgage payment might go up a little bit, overall, what they're spending every month can go down dramatically, depending on how much debt you're paying off. It can save you a big bundle of money. And then if you're so inclined, you can take that savings and throw it back on your mortgage and pay off your house that much faster. So it's actually a neat strategy for paying off your home a lot more quickly than that 30 years because, you know, nobody wants to be paying on a loan for 30 years. If you have the ability to pay it off faster, that's one way to do it.
Yeah, actually, recently, personally, for my mortgage, I've been looking into doing a 20-year. We started with a 30-year, and we're looking at going down to a 20-year, and our payment's going to stay about the same. It's going to go up a couple $100, but it's going to help us save on interest, and that's really the name of the game.
That is the name of the game. Well, listen, we're going to take another quick break. If you want to learn more about this stuff, maybe chat with us in person, you can go to HinosHomeShow.com, set up an appointment to talk to us there, and we'll be happy to go through your situation with you. But we're going to be back here with more of Hino's Home Show in just a minute. Back to Hino's Home Show, brought to you as always by our fine friends over at Accurate Mortgage. Find them at accuratemtg.com. You can find us at hinoshomeshow.com, just in case you were wondering. We now have in the studio our special guest. We have Wendy Dyes of the Legacy Real Estate Group in Brentwood. Great real estate company, and she really knows her stuff about the Nashville market. I wanted to chat with you a little bit about some great stuff. Welcome to the show, Wendy.
Thank you, Heino. I appreciate it. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So typically, this time of year is kind of the slow time. Winter, you know, people aren't really buying and selling houses as much because they're busy with Christmas and all that kind of thing. But that's not really what's going on this year, is it?
No, you know, and that may be for a typical market, but Nashville isn't the typical market in the last 5 years, you know. So some of the things that you guys were talking about, I mean, with the interest rates as low as they are, so many jobs coming into Nashville. So no, we saw a slight slowdown in the fall, but things are really picking up right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to concentrate on buying and selling when you're trying to wrap presents and, you know, buy presents and travel to the relatives. But I would have to say the last two houses I bought were both in like December.
Well, I was going to say I sold three houses over Christmas. So, yeah, people are off and they're ready to look at houses. So,
yeah, it's really hard to wrap a house.
You're right.
You know, if you're giving it as a gift, you know, it's hard to put that under the tree. So that's kind of interesting. But so when will things really typically heat up for the summer?
Well, typically May is the number one market.
May?
So, yeah, is the number one month just because kids are out of school. People don't like to move before their kids are out of school.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to start seeing an influx, but we're still in a housing shortage and there's a lot of people moving into town. So with the rates the way that they are right now, I've got a lot of buyers and the inventory is really low. So if you're on the market right now, it's selling pretty quickly.
So you say inventory, you mean the number of houses on the market.
Correct.
Now, I saw an interesting stat. This was specifically for Rutherford County. It was something like there's roughly 1,000, last week or the week before, there were roughly 1,000 people looking for houses in Rutherford County in about the $250,000 price range or less, which is kind of the entry level.
Right.
You know, and there were 5 houses on the market.
You're right.
At that price range. 5.
And that's
typical for 1,000 people looking, you know.
That's typical for any area in Nashville right now.
Really?
Correct.
So, you know, how do you compete? I mean, how do you, if you've got a buyer, you're trying to find a house, how do you compete with that?
Well, the first thing they need to do is get a good agent.
Yeah.
And the second thing they need to get is a good mortgage lender.
Oh, look at you. Look at you bringing it right back around.
So, you know, really understanding their finances, understanding, being able to pull the trigger quickly. It's going and seeing what is on the market, educating themselves with a good agent to know what's on the market so they can make an educated, quick decision. So when the
You don't have time to.
You don't.
How fast do you have? Give me an example. What's the fastest one you've seen sell recently?
Well, same day.
Same day.
So it depends. It depends on the price range, depends on where it is. But, you know, typical, we saw some days on market, you know, a little longer this last fall. I'm starting to see that be a little bit shorter just because the inventory is so low right now. And so get yourself in a competitive advantage, meaning understanding all of your finances, getting that pre-approval letter, educating yourself as to the must-haves for you. But the biggest...
When you say must-haves, you mean like what you absolutely have to have in a house. It needs to have a 2-car garage. It needs to have...
Correct.
You know, bonus room or whatever.
But I will tell you what, the deal breakers are the biggest.
Like
you know, what is going to be your deal breaker? So if you have to have that garage, don't go looking at a house that doesn't have a garage.
Because you're just it's wasting harder everybody's to find. Time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you may fall in love with it, but then you know you really can't buy it because you have a motorcycle or you have some special need that you really have to have that garage.
That's interesting. Well, how does the Nashville market in general kind of compare to other real estate markets?
Well, the good news is we are 4th hottest real estate market according to Zillow this last year, and we're expected to be again. So about 5 years in a row, I mean, we are in the top 3 to 4 markets.
Wow.
In all of the country.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So the average home price, I'm guessing that's creeping up? I mean, what's like the average price for a house around here?
Well, right now, according to all the gurus, I mean, we're about $316,000 for the median house price.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's definitely.
That makes it hard for a first time buyer to jump in there.
It does. And so creative financing and planning, getting in now. So even if you're anticipating in the next year or so, how much money do you need to, you know, save to have debt for a down payment, working on your credit score, things like that can help you get into those that higher price point home.
I think one of the things that a lot of people don't factor in is that it goes beyond just buying the house. You know, you got your down payment, you got your savings, you save for that. But then once you've spent that, man, you're just getting started. You got to turn the water on. You got to turn the electricity on. You got to get cable if you want that. You know, just there's all this spending that needs to happen just to get into a house, you know. And usually, you know, if it's your first house, you don't have a bunch of furniture. If you've upgraded, you now have more rooms that you need to fill with furniture, and all of that costs money. And sometimes people like spend it all getting into the house, and then they're like, you know, living in a furniture-free house for... I have a friend who has a house that's pretty much empty, and it's been that way for about a year because...
Well, it's cheaper than renting.
That's true. Have you seen rents?
Right, yeah.
Holy cow, what
if you
is
can
that?
Even if you can find something. Yeah, there is a housing shortage in Nashville. There's a housing shortage. There's more people coming into Nashville than there are homes, and that's anticipated to be even higher this next year. So
who's all coming into town?
Well, we've got probably over 10,000 new jobs that will be coming in. So we've got Amazon that will be coming into the Gulch with over 5,000, you know, jobs that are all executive pay, all over about $150,000 base salary.
Okay.
So that's putting pressure on the market.
Bridgestone. So that'll increase demand for the higher priced homes, you think?
Correct. Yeah. And proximity to downtown, people, you know, wanting those shorter commutes. So sure. Looking into some even emerging markets like Buchanan District, Wedgwood, Houston, areas mm-hmm. like that, you know, you're going to start seeing housing prices go up. Builders are coming in to some of those emerging markets.
Does that make a lot of investors come in and fix up old houses? And
Absolutely. So I would say if you have owned a home in the last 10 years in some of those markets, you know, you need to really understand what your house is worth because they're going to be knocking on your doors to buy it.
Wow. So you work with a lot of buyers. So what are some of the main factors that people should consider if they are looking for a new home? I mean, if you've already had a home, you kind of know what you want.
Right.
Because you're selling your house for a reason. It's like, we really need this and that.
Right.
But for a first-time buyer, how do you figure out what's the right home?
Well, I always say there's like three factors, and you really can't change these three. There's price, there's condition of the home, and then there's location.
I'm guessing you can get two of them, sometimes, but you can't get all three.
Yeah, you know, if you've got really, really deep pockets, you can probably buy whatever you want, wherever you want.
That's true about anything. You're right. You know, if you've got enough money, you can do anything, right?
There's $4 million condos downtown, so if you've got enough money, you can put
$4 million for a condo.
Absolutely, yeah. But usually, most people in just about any price range, something is going to have to give. You know, so you're either going to have to pay more money for what you want, where you want it, or maybe the condition is not going to be in the right area, right what you're looking for. So usually those are the three things that you need to look at. And if you are set on a budget, then you need to look at location. What are some other areas that you would want? Or maybe look at condition. I mean, being able to remodel something, you know, just putting some
So buying cosmetic- the house in the area that you want, but correct? Maybe the house needs a lot of work.
Maybe some work.
Or
you know?
Some work, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the work that's needed is mostly cosmetic.
Exactly.
You know, it's always kind of, you probably see this a lot. I'm always amazed at how people can't see past, you know, a bad color in the living room or the carpet's terrible or the wallpaper's terrible. And they're like, oh, no, I don't like this house.
Most buyers
don't.
You know
how easy it is to change that?
Well, one of the things is when people are willing to pay the top dollar.
Yeah.
But when they're paying top dollar, they want a top dollar house. So most of these people, most of the buyers that are out there right now are millennials. We had about 37% of all the home buyers last year were millennials.
That's a big chunk.
It's a huge chunk. And they're looking for move-in ready, very easy. They're looking for some of those upgrades. They don't want to have time to paint. They don't have time to change out the lighting. They're wanting some of the cool gadgets that you guys were talking about in the home. They're wanting it painted, great lighting, garages, things like that, you know. So they're willing to pay, but they want all of these features. So if you are a home owner and you're looking to sell, those are some of the things you need to look at. So it doesn't cost a lot of money to upgrade your lighting or to paint a room. very neutral colors, things mm-hmm. like that, you know. But to them, in their mind, they're thinking, oh, it's too much work. It's going to cost too much money.
Yeah.
And if I'm paying this really high price, I want it perfect.
Yeah.
So you're also up against the home builders. So to them, they can walk
in. They have an army of stagers and decorators. They'll right. make that model home look like amazing.
Well, we've kind of hit the area, the time in the market now that the home builders are catching up with demand for the buyers. Mm-hmm. So we've got a lot of new inventory out there for new homes that people can walk into that are beautiful and shiny. So if you are looking to sell your house, that's what your competition will be.
Wow. And a lot of people don't know this, but they have special furniture for model homes.
Oh, yeah, to make it look perfect.
Make it look bigger. Actually, it's like 3/4 size couches and that kind of thing. Stuff like that that makes the house look roomier than it right. really is. So then you buy the place and you get your couch in there and you're like, wait a minute, this doesn't fit. You know, now I got to go buy a new couch. Oh, man. Well, that's pretty amazing. What about the, people always worried about a crash. Their house price is going to go tumbling down
at
some point.
I wish I had a crystal ball, but to be honest with you, all the economists are saying that's not coming anytime soon. We still have so many new jobs like we discussed that are coming into Nashville. We're still in a housing crisis, and we are the fourth top market in the nation. So I just don't see that coming. It's going to be a little slower, but this year with about a 2% increase, 2.8%, but this is still going to be a great time to buy.
That is great news. Well, listen, we're going to take another quick break, and then we'll be back with more of Hino's Home Show. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I do live in a brick house. I don't know if you know that. A lot of people do around here. We got Wendy Dyes, realtor extraordinaire, and of course the great Steve Kenny, one of the great folks over at Accurate Mortgage. I say over at, I'm at Accurate Mortgage too, but you know, it just makes it sound like, you know, you're awesome. Well, you are awesome. So that's why we have you here, because you really know your stuff. We're talking with Wendy a little bit about house selling and buying here in the Nashville area. And we talked a little bit about in the last segment about selling your home. Now, if you've got a house and you're thinking you might want to upgrade or it might be time to move, how do you know if it's the right time to make that move, or if you should stay put, or if maybe you should just, you know, remodel?
Well, I mean, the first thing to do is just give me a call. So I'd love to be.
Shameless plug, shameless plug. All right, we're doing the shameless plug. How do people get a hold of you?
WendyDyesRealty.com. So you can go on there and
it's D-Y-E-S.
D-Y-E-S, mm-hmm. Realty.com. And I'd love to be able to take a look at it. If you've been in your home in the last 3 to 5 years, I'm sure you've got some equity by now. Just about any neighborhood in Middle Tennessee. So when do you know? I mean, where are you looking to upgrade to? Mm-hmm. How much equity that you do have now in your home and where you're wanting to go? So the good thing is just come out and let me do a free comparison analysis for you. And I can kind of talk to you about how long I think it would take to sell your house, what it would take to sell it. And the biggest thing is where you want to go to.
Mm-hmm. So how do you go about figuring out, you know, because it seems like a black magic science mm-hmm. to some people. How do you figure out how much to ask for your house? Well, first of all, everybody thinks that their house is awesome.
They
do. You know, and they're very proud of their house. I mean, as a mortgage person, I hear that all the time. Hey, what do you think your house is worth? And invariably people will be like, well, I got the biggest lot on the block and, you know, I just repainted, so I think my house is worth $5 million. It's like, yeah, but all the other houses are only worth about $300,000. So, you know, so how do you deal with that, and how do you figure out how much to ask for it?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, and the truth is going to be is what will it appraise for? So that's only going to be homes in certain neighborhoods within a mile of your home that's like your home that have sold in the past year. Mm-hmm. Those are the comps that we'll look at. You can put in consideration of condition of the home. The market of how many people that's looking for that sort of house. So a house that's, in a smaller, under $250,000 range may go a lot faster than something that's over $500,000 or $600,000.
Right.
There's
right.
more buyers that would compete for that. So inflation is something that's real, mm-hmm. In demand on the market for your home.
Well, and a lot of times, well, actually, I shouldn't say a lot of times, but sometimes the appraisal comes back a lot lower than what the purchase price might have been. So you might have been willing to pay, let's just say, $300,000 on a house, and the appraisal comes back at $280,000. What happens then?
Well, based on the contract, you can either get out of the contract, you can negotiate that, you can relook at the appraisal with the company and put your recommendations in as to why, maybe things that they've missed. Appraisers are human as well, and they're very...
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's pretty true. They are just people, and so they have been made, you know, they've been known to make some mistakes, and yeah. so on square footage and different details. So oftentimes they are very willing to be able to look at that appraisal and make sure that it's right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but in most contracts you would be... it is contingent on the home being able
appraising
to appraise
for what you're right. what you're selling it for. Well, and that might sometimes be an opportunity for the buyer to get a better deal on a house. I mean, if they're able to say, "Look, the appraisal came back at, you know, $5,000 less. How about you knock $5,000 off the purchase price, and we'll move on." And how often does a seller say, "Okay, let's just go ahead and knock $5,000 off the price"?
Most of the time they want you to renegotiate it,
yeah.
you know, I mean, because they know that their house is going to appraise usually, or there's going to be somebody. There are yeah. a lot of times people that are willing to pay more than what the home is valued. I've seen yeah. a lot of that, especially a couple of years ago. People were, you know, willing to guarantee the mm-hmm. appraise value
really?
Of the home, right, and paying, bringing to the table more money than what it would actually appraise for.
Well, bringing it full circle to a shameless plug, if you have a good realtor in the first place who prices it right in the beginning,
that's right,
then you don't run into that problem.
Correct.
But sometimes, I guess it takes a realtor with a backbone to be able to tell the seller, no, we shouldn't really price your house at this higher number. I know you love your house.
Right.
But, you know, we really need to come in. You probably got to fight that battle sometimes, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's what I thought. Well, how do you get your house ready for a sale? I mean, most people, if they're selling, they're packed in their house and maybe they've been there a long time. They got a lot of stuff.
Right.
What do you got to do generally to get it ready to put it on the market?
Well, one of the biggest things that you can do for yourself is declutter and clean. You know, it doesn't cost a lot of money, just some time.
Clean.
Yes, clean.
Tell me more about this clean thing.
Make sure that small things that maybe you just overlook every single day, like your doors are wiped down, your windows and all your light fixtures, things that you don't clean on a daily basis,
uh-huh.
but other people will see that. You know, use the smell test if you've got smokers or dogs and animals and pets and kids
yeah.
can smell.
Huh.
Yeah. So
again, I'm learning so much today.
Right. So, you know, that's the easiest thing you can do for yourself. Get a storage locker, pack it up nice and neatly in the garage, make sure that everything is, you know, I can utilize your space in your attic, in your garage, and get rid of all the things that you don't need, really need.
Declutter. You basically need to stage that place.
You do.
And get it. I mean, when I sold, my last house a few years ago, we basically moved out.
Right.
We rented a storage building and we put all of our stuff in there and just kind of kept one or two little things. We staged the place. I actually made my family move out. They moved in with my parents for like 2 weeks.
And they took the cat.
They took the cats. They took the dog. They took everything. And I just stayed behind and I made sure that the house was perfect every morning before I left. So that if anybody came to show the house, it was ready to go, you know, and it was not a thing out of place.
Well, that's right. Just know that this is soon not going to be your house. So what you want to do is not make it your house. Take all your personal effects down, your photographs, anything that's really breakable and cherishable. And
now, why is that? Some people might think, oh, I want it to look homey.
What
so
you
that
need,
people would, you
right,
know.
Right, right. What you want to do is have a buyer be able to walk in and picture themselves living there.
Okay.
They don't want to feel like it's your house. They want to start thinking that it could be theirs. And so when you start seeing them with the measuring tapes and measuring for their furniture and things, you know you probably got a good buyer.
Okay. Right? How about some of the little tricks that you hear about sometimes is like, oh, if somebody's coming over to look at your house, you want to make sure to have like cookies baking in the oven and get that cookie smell going or
well, again, you know, that the smell test, right?
Yeah.
So people like that, you know, just make sure that it's really aired out. I'd just rather a clean smell than any other odor, you know, so.
What odor? Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, making it feel homey, making sure your lighting, so you talked a lot about, even some lighting, we want the brightest lights. So when you live in a home, you like them to be warm lights.
Yeah.
But when you're showing your house, you want all the windows open and you want the brightest lights that you can get. So you want it to
so
be
they can
bright.
See everything.
Where people, buyers can see things. It doesn't feel like a cave.
Yeah, okay. Unless you're looking for a man cave. In that case, you know, bring it on. Now, what about neighborhoods? What are the hot neighborhoods right now?
What I will say is that there's not a bad neighborhood in all of Middle Tennessee. So
really?
It depends on what you're looking for. So if you're a family oriented and you're moving into town, you're really going to be looking at Sumner County, like Hendersonville, Gallatin. You're looking at Franklin.
Okay.
Possibly Mount Juliet and Wilson County. So those areas are known for families, great schools. If your commute wants to be a little bit less, you know, if you're not worried about the school districts, I mean, people are looking at things like Donaldson.
Okay.
Green Hills, really hot, Brentwood. Some of those areas.
You're pretty much naming the entire town here at this point.
Yeah. So. But if you're looking to be price conscious, some of the areas that people are looking to go out further. So if you want to get a little bit more bang for your buck, look at White House in Portland.
Yeah.
Look down in Murray County. Columbia is really becoming strong. Places even like Old Hickory.
Yeah.
Lots of new building there. You can get a lot more bang for your buck. Donaldson, Old Hickory, and Hermitage have gotten hot just because of the proximity to downtown, the airport, and lots of new commercial space that's being built in those areas. So,
does the airport bother folks when they're looking for houses, the proximity? I mean, everybody wants to be conveniently located to the airport, but does anybody want to be right next to the airport?
Yeah, it just depends, you know. I mean, to be honest with you, right next to the airport means being on the lake in Percy Priest. So there's areas.
So the roar of the planes kind of mixes with the roar of the motorboats and the speedboats.
Absolutely.
And the jet skis and all that kind of thing. Well, that's pretty good. Now, what about families versus single people? I mean, I'm guessing some areas are better or more family-oriented and some, like, you probably don't want to have a family. Or if you have a family, you probably don't want to live in, you know, right smack downtown in one of those fancy condos.
Right.
Place to play.
Right. Look at places like Mount Juliet that have more like Providence, that have the parks and the swimming pools and the planned urban communities with the sidewalks, things like that. So there's a lot of new areas popping up like that.
Interesting. Well, this has been pretty awesome. Thank you guys for joining us today on Hino's Home Show. Wendy, where can people find you if they want to contact you?
Find me at wendydiesrealty.com.
That's pretty easy. wendydiesrealty.com. And you can find us at hinoshomeshow.com. You can make an appointment there if you want to come talk to us. You can even, you know, find out way to get your question on the show. We'd love to hear from you. If there's something you want us to be talking about, let us know. And if you want to be a caller on the show, we didn't take any calls today, but you know, we do take calls. So if you want to be a caller on the show, you can find out how to do that as well. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, the Instagram, all that good stuff. We just enjoyed the heck out of today, and we look forward to seeing you next week on Hino's Home Show.